This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with me, Roshan, Chuang, and Noel. And in about half an hour, we'll be discussing the situation in South Korea as they battle the pandemic and hold elections at the same time with Dr. Nurliana Kamarudin, Senior Lecturer at the Asia-Europe Institute and University of Malaya. Now, in the meantime, let's talk about the MCO extension. We've been talking about all morning, I guess, and all week, really, if you were at home. While Malaysia remains under the MCO until April 28th, the government released a new list of industries allowed to operate during the third phase of the MCO, which includes businesses such as auto manufacturing, hardware, electrical and electronic stores, optometrists, and machinery and equipment and aerospace as well. Slowly trying to open up the economy again.
Yes, I suppose this is what an exit plan might look like, a phased one. And of course, what really took social media by storm is the opening of barbers and hairdressers. Should that be allowed? I think that was the big question of the day.
Yeah, my concern was how do I social distance from my barber if I want to get a haircut? Like, really a real concern. Like, I would have to see him put the Dettol on. He'll have to wear a face mask.
You have to wear a mask too.
How is he going to get my beard if I have a mask on?
That's why he doesn't.
Some practical challenges.
That's why some are closed. I guess in terms of where the government's thought process is, there's really the selection of which essential industries are essential is whether they're part of the global supply chain, how important they are to Malaysia's tax revenue, perhaps, how relevant they are to the daily lives of Malaysians and functioning of the economy.
Yes, now for more thoughts here, we speak to P. Gunasegaram, Editor-in-Chief of the online news portal Focus Malaysia. Now, Gunasegaram, thank you so much for joining us this morning. The government has lifted operation restrictions on certain industries, as we've just mentioned, during the third phase of the MCO. Do you see a clear rationale for the sectors or businesses that have been given exemptions here?
I think largely, as you all said, barbershops, I mean, that's ridiculous. That is probably, I mean, just to say one thing on it, there is no better way than that to spread the COVID-19 pandemic. Huh? Yeah. So can you imagine the kind of spread it will result in if you allow barbershops to operate? If just one barber gets infected by a client, how many others can be infected as a result? So that's really crazy. I think they have to stop that immediately.
Yeah, so looking at the other industries, do you think the government should be adding more industries then?
I think eventually they should be thinking in terms of a plan to reopen all industries. And they should have rules and regulations such that these industries can be gradually reopened. Obviously, the most important thing is keeping a physical distance between people. So if you have, say, like crowded offices where people are sitting right next to each other, then you may need to have, say, only about 50% of the staff are working. These are the things that have been done in China and so on. So there are precedents from which we can learn from. And I think it is important, actually, to come up with the rules and regulations first before you start opening up these. And be very clear about the kind of rules under which you operate. That is extremely important.
Yeah, Gunnar, where the thought process of the government is in terms of relaxing the restrictions on the MCO, it's quite intuitive to know why initially the government allowed Heineken to resume operations because of the excise duties that are due to the government. I mean, huge incomes and huge tax revenues which would otherwise be hit by the COVID-19. But obviously later rescinded because of political pressure. In your opinion, what is the thought process of the government where they are allowing which industries to open? And what kind of pressures are they? What kind of pressures would actually overcome their decision-making process?
I think in a situation like this, you must not let political pressure dictate the kind of action that you take. In the case of Heineken and Carlsberg, they are a food and beverage company, so there are a lot of people who like to have their daily beer or a beer once or two times a week or whatever the frequency might be. So if you are defining what is essential at the end of the day, is a cup of coffee essential? I mean, for many people it is. For other people, don't even drink coffee. So those kind of things are very subjective. So if you classify a company as a food and beverage company, stick to it. You know? So if you say food and beverage companies can operate, then you should let Heineken and Carlsberg operate. And I was just listening to the news on BFM, and I think the report said that the government is losing $189 million a month in revenue by not allowing Heineken and Carlsberg to operate. So clearly, this is not even in the interest of the broader economy and the kind of revenue that the government gets. Remember, you also have to make sure that your economy operates as much as it can operate during this lockdown period.
So, Gunnar, we're just switching over to, on that note, switching a bit to politics, particularly patronage politics, and in a recent commentary you wrote in on the leadership changes currently taking place or that have taken place at government agencies and GLCs. Now, the swapping of political appointees from one administration to another is quite a normal process. So why is this problematic at this moment?
I think in this case here, it is very, very clear what the government is trying to do. It's basically trying to get enough support from MPs so that they survive a vote of no confidence in parliament if that comes through. So in this case here, what they are doing is to tie in the interests of the members of parliament in terms of power, in terms of patronage, in terms of money even, to the current prime minister. So if you make them ministers, deputy ministers, if you give them plum positions in GLCs where they earn a lot of money, and where they have actually the ability to dispense patronage to others and thereby even make more money, although that may be illegal, then there is a strong incentive for these MPs to continue to support the government. So that is what is wrong with it at this point in time. And on top of that, many of these politicians do not have a track record in corporate matters. So they are not going to be of any useful benefit to any of these GLCs or government agencies. And if you look at some of the people who are being replaced, you're going to get a lot of incompetence in there. You know? Basically, right behind the ear politicians who are going to be effectively heads of many GLCs.
You know, your article was an excellent one where you really pointed out some quite disturbing examples of very good professionals or those, you know, with a very good track record now being replaced. And what disturbs me about this other thing, this news piece here by Malaysia Kini, past Secretary General says, all MPs not holding government positions to be made GLC heads. I mean, this is really, this is such a long time practice. But how can we change this?
I think at the end of the day, it is the government which has to be good enough to change this. Now. And if the government is not good enough to implement these things, then it is up to the public to reject the government when the time comes. You know, the previous Pakatan government had made a commitment to make all these changes, but unfortunately, the changes were very slow in coming. And nothing was done in terms of many areas of corporate governance. I mean, the late KC Wara, who died recently, he was the head of the Institutional Governance Committee, which made many recommendations to the Council of Eminent Persons, but nobody heard about it anymore. And even the recommendations were made public, were made an official secret under the previous government itself. So this government is basically a very UMNO-BN-like government, and one can only expect that these kind of things will get worse, especially when the majority is very slim. And just the crossover of a few MPs can actually change the government or result in the government falling. You know?
Well, it's quite clear that these appointments are very are politically expedient for the PN government, not merit-driven. With only about 20 more MPs' heads to be turned for the next parliamentary sitting, Gunnar, how tenuous is the PN government, in your opinion, at this point in time?
I think the They are rather tenuous, but the thing is, who is going to entice these MPs who are sitting on the fence to go over to the other side, and what will they give to entice these MPs over? You know, so some kind of money, some kind of reward, some kind of power exchange. But the thing is, the One feels that this government may just continue in place until the next elections because of the disunity of the current opposition, which was the previous ruling party. So even Anwar and Mahathir are not on a united front even until now. And so I really don't see Pakatan Harapan coming back into power under those circumstances. So this will be a very tenuous government, but it will continue, I think, until the next elections.
So, Gunnar, let's talk about the reform agenda. Is it a foregone conclusion that it is, for lack of a better word, dead under this government? Or do you think Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has urgent reasons to ensure that, other reasons to ensure that the reforms continue?
I think Tan Sri Muhyiddin is fighting for survival. You know, his main task is to remain in power and to avoid that vote of no confidence. So right now, that takes top priority over anything else. So reforms at the moment are the last thing in his mind. So, I mean, as far as the COVID-19 situation is concerned, while this is happening, so far, at least in the control of COVID-19, the government seems to be listening to expert advice. And the health DG has done a great job in terms of containing the COVID. But the government is slithering in terms of the economic measures it's taking. And really, in a big way, allowing patronage to come in, even at a point as difficult as this. I think if they were to reach out to the opposition and say, look, you know, let's convene parliament, let's forget about vote of no confidence, they will be able to do it. For some reason, I cannot understand they're not doing that. In fact, Anwar has said that he will not raise the issue of no confidence at this point in time if they wanted to pass legislation related to controlling COVID-19. And taking proper economic measures. Yeah.
All right, Gunnar, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. That was P. Gunasekaram, Editor-in-Chief of Focus Malaysia. Now, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, we'll be taking a look at education, and more specifically schools in Malaysia, with Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim, Chairperson of the Parents Action Group for Education Malaysia, otherwise known as PAGE. That's happening after the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.